This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Thank you for downloading Pop-Up Ideas from BBC Radio 4. Here's Tim Harford.
Hello and welcome to Pop-Up Ideas, your weekly dose of intellectual stimulation, expertly blended with live-action storytelling from the fields of political science and anthropology. We're at the South Bank Centre in London, and this week it is my pleasure to introduce one of the world's most influential counter-insurgency experts. He was an Australian Lieutenant Colonel peacekeeping in East Timor. He advised General Petraeus on strategy in Iraq, making a few controversial remarks along the way. The Washington Post described his ideas as revolutionising military thinking throughout the West. His forthcoming book is Out of the Mountains. Please welcome David Kilcullen.
Thanks, mate. Thank you all. I want to talk to you about some big issues, about what life will be like in many cities on the planet by the middle of this century, and about what that might mean for you. But before I do that, I thought I might start by telling you about a guy that I met last year, just outside of Mogadishu, the capital of Somalia. These days, he's a commander in the Somali army, but he and his guys used to be clan militia fighters during the civil war of the 1990s. These are the same clan militia who fought the American Rangers during what a lot of people know as Black Hawk Down, a battle that happened in October 1993. Somalis don't call it that, by the way. They call it Malinti Rangers, which means the Day of the Rangers, when the Americans raided the Bakara Market in downtown Mogadishu, trying to arrest clan leaders who backed a warlord called Mohammed Farah Aidid. The Rangers were supporting a United Nations mission that was bringing food to Somalis after the civil war and state collapse brought about a massive famine. The Rangers rode in on Black Hawk helicopters. They attacked a house near the Bakara market, seized the elders and took them back to their base at the airport. But in the process, two of their helicopters were shot down. The soldiers who went to rescue the crews became pinned down and they ended up fighting for their lives through the night. That battle killed 18 Americans. The US withdrew from Somalia, the UN pulled out shortly thereafter, and the country sank into 20 years of chaos. Somali losses were huge. Somewhere between 1,500 and 3,000 Somalis were killed on just that one day alone or seriously injured. If you've read Mark Bowden's book, Black Hawk Down, or seen the movie of the same name, then you probably have a very clear mental picture of Somalia, and in particular of Mogadishu. Brown, dusty, rubbish-strewn streets, dead dogs, ruined buildings, starving people, basically tumbleweeds blowing through a scene of total destruction. But if you visit Mogadishu today, that's actually not what you'll find. When I was there last year, shops and houses were freshly painted. Bakara Market was doing a vibrant trade. At the money exchange, the Somali shilling, which is a currency that survived for two decades without a state or a central bank, was freely traded and floated on market rates. It gets updated between 2 and 5 times a day, and the rates are transmitted by SMS text message to traders out in the city. There were restaurants and hotels, even a gelato shop. Cafes were crowded with men watching soccer on satellite television and good-naturedly arguing about scores and penalties. Mogadishu was a fully functioning, vibrant, connected city. Now, the reason that Mogadishu looks like it does today is partly because of guys like the former clan fighter, the Somali commander who I met. His militia are now Somali army troops. And over the last 18 months, they've pushed the Al-Shabaab terrorists out of the city and cleared much of the countryside. There's now a functioning government, albeit one that still needs a lot of international help. But still, that's an amazing turnaround. Only 2 years ago, the Somali army didn't even exist. And African Union peacekeepers were fighting from foxholes right on the airfield against Shabab fighters who were less than 100 yards away. It took intense fighting by these peacekeepers, plus a small number of unarmed civilian advisors, to clear Mogadishu and then to advance to the towns around the outskirts of the city. Part of their job was to stand up a new Somali army from these very same clan militia fighters. When I caught up with them in the middle of last year, they'd just captured the town of Afgoy in the lower Shabelle River Valley. The Somali commander that I met had spent the entire fight for Afgoy essentially wandering around the battlefield armed with nothing but a walking stick and a pistol. A walking stick is a symbol of age and authority in Somalia, and he was essentially moving around and encouraging his troops. Over 2 decades of irregular warfare, guys like him have figured out a pretty elegant, simple, swarming style of fighting, where they flow through the countryside mounted in gun trucks that carry a heavy weapon and about 6 irregular fighters, and they direct their maneuver without any need for orders. These trucks are called technicals, and that's an expression that actually says a lot about Somali history. When the aid agencies and the NGOs moved into Somalia in the early 1990s, they hired clan fighters to protect their food convoys. Because they were charitable organizations and NGOs, they actually weren't allowed to pay for armed security guards. So they decided to fund the clans with donor money under the rubric of technical assistance. And so the word technical entered Somali as the local slang for a gun truck. And that term is now used around the world in many conflicts. There's a backstory here, one that a guy called Richard Norton touched on about a decade ago when he called Mogadishu a feral city. He was talking about a sort of Mad Max environment where even though the state collapses, the city keeps functioning and people substitute their own informal systems for what the state used to provide. What Norton's pointing to is that Mark Bowden's description of Mogadishu in Black Hawk Down was never really the full picture. The city wasn't destroyed. Instead, it went feral. If the cities we live in, cities like London, with its 500,000 surveillance cameras, can be considered to be domesticated, then a city like Mogadishu is one that's regressed back to the wild, like a feral animal or like a thicket of weeds overrunning a garden. Now, people often assume that what happened to Mogadishu was that the state collapsed, the civil war broke out, and then the city went feral. But as the Somali writer Nuruddin Farah pointed out a few years ago, actually it was the other way around. In the generation after Somali independence in 1960, an enormous number of rural people migrated from the Somali countryside into the capital city, and the city's population swelled dramatically. The town just couldn't handle the flow of people. Its infrastructure and systems lacked the carrying capacity to cope. Over the next 30 years, warlords and power brokers forged a series of competing fiefdoms that eventually tore the city apart and ultimately brought down the state. Mogadishu didn't go feral because the state collapsed. Rather, the state collapsed because the city was already feral. So why does that all matter to you? I can see a few of you thinking, well, Mogadishu is a famous basket case. What does that have to do with me? Well, it matters because what happened in Mogadishu is happening in dozens of cities today across the planet. It took all of human history up until 1960, the year of Somali independence, for the planet to get to a total population of 3 billion people. The latest estimate is that we're going to add the same number of people, 3 billion, in just the next 30 years. And they're all going to go into urban environments on coastlines in the developing world. The world's population will stabilize by about the middle of this century. It won't keep growing forever, but it's going to stabilize at somewhere between 9.1 and 9.3 billion people. That's about 2 billion more people in total than we have on the planet today. And over that time, urban environments are going to absorb all of those 2 billion people, and they're going to draw in about another billion people from rural environments across the planet. On average, about 1.4 million people migrate to a city every week. Coastal cities in the developing world are where the majority of people on the planet are going to be living by the middle of this century. Here's a couple of examples. Dhaka, the capital of Bangladesh, is a city that is one of the fastest growing megacities on the planet. People have been rightly shocked by the horrific factory collapse that happened earlier this year and killed 1,100 people. But the city's been growing at such a rate that problems like that are only really the tip of the iceberg. In 1950, Dhaka had a population of 400,000 people. Today, its population is 15 million. The city's struggling to cope with that size and scale of a massive influx of population. It stresses every system in the city. Solutions that are developed to deal with the city's problems are overtaken by events before they can even be implemented. And Dhaka, like Bangladesh in general, and like 80% of major cities on the planet, is coastal. Even if we ignore the risk of climate change, as more and more people move to cities on coastlines, more people will be affected by flooding. In Bangladesh, 5 feet of sea level rise puts 22 million people underwater. That's only half the storm surge that hit New York City last year during Hurricane Sandy. This issue of urban overstretch, I believe, is going to be the greatest challenge and also the greatest opportunity of our generation. If you fly over Mogadishu, the most obvious feature is the forest of satellite dishes and cell phone towers. 24% of Somalis own a cell phone, and they're intensively connected with each other and with about a million other Somalis in the diaspora across the globe. We're now so thoroughly connected with each other and so intensively and continuously joined up with global communication systems that what happens in one place rapidly affects all. Now, it's not all bad. As cities grow, their adaptive resources grow too. Global urbanization is an enormous opportunity to lift people out of poverty, to unlock immense reserves of human talent, to open up new markets and help people achieve better lives. At least a billion more people may be in the global middle class by the middle of this century. And I hope that places like Mogadishu will continue to transform for the better in that time. But I'll make the obvious point. Flying into these cities on helicopters with guns blazing probably isn't the best way to handle those kinds of challenges. What the experience of Mogadishu tells you is that a city is a living, breathing, organic system. It has a metabolism. It flows and changes and evolves over time. On the day of the ranges, the Americans basically poked Mogadishu in the eye and the city pushed back. They were lucky to make it out of there alive. If we want to help people overcome the challenges of urban overstretch and the chaos that goes with it, we'll need to be less like the rangers and a lot more like that small group of unarmed civilian advisors who helped the Somalis control Mogadishu last year. I'm not really talking about military stuff here. I'm talking about a system of co-design. Internationals can't just come in, brush people aside, pat them on the head and say, we're going to solve your problems. It doesn't work like that. But at the same time, locals often don't have the knowledge or the capacity or the perspective to solve their own problems alone. It takes some functional and technical knowledge, but it also takes what only insiders can provide, and that's leadership, context, and insight. Can that work? I've seen it work in about a dozen cities across the planet. As we approach this coming problem of urban overstretch, we're going to need some of the same spirit as that Somali commander I've been talking about. The ability to be survivors, to adapt, to bounce back, to be resilient in the face of shocks, and figure things out for ourselves when systems that we take for granted start to fall apart. The future doesn't have to be what the great urbanist Mike Davis calls a planet of slums. But we'll need to be resilient, adaptive, and resourceful to make sure that it's not. Thank you.
Pop-up Ideas was hosted by Tim Harford and the speaker was David Kilcullen. And you can download many other current affairs programmes from bbc.co.uk/radio4.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.